Good morning. My name is Santanu Thapa. I'm a graduate student at the in the Department of Crop Sciences at the University of Illinois. And today I'm going to talk about prairie corngrass as a dedicated energy crop in a wet marginal land. So I'm going to start my presentation with the introduction of a marginal land, and then I'll go to the overall project goal and specific objectives of my research and experimental design. Then I'll go to the results, and in the results section I'm going to talk about mostly the growth and development and biomass yield, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about the feedstock composition. Then I'm going to conclude with a summary slide of my research. So as we all know, there's a large significant area of land in the United States that has where we cannot grow our regular food crops, which are considered marginally productive land. This is just an example of a wetland area in Illinois, but there are a lot of other factors that can cause marginality in the land. That can be poor physical soil physical characteristics, or dry area climate, and also some due to the soil salinity issues, and also barren areas, also called marginal land. So there are estimated of 13% of total land in United States is considered marginal land. So those marginal land could be used for bioenergy feed production. So by doing that, we will be able to minimize the land use competition between the food crops. So that will also reduce the potential land clearing for biofuel expansion in the future. And the biomass resource potential of potential on these marginal lands in the United States only is over 377 million megagrams per year. And the ethanol production potential is about 148 billion liters per year, and which is 19% of the current gasoline consumption in the United States. So there is a need to find identify those kind of marginal lands and be able to utilize those to produce food, bioenergy feedstocks. And for that, an ideal biomass crop would be efficiently utilize the available resources and convert them into the harvestable biomass, and using low minimum input and affecting not much affecting to the environment, so minimal negative impact to the environment. So coming on to dedicated energy crops, these are the non-food crops which are specifically grown for bioenergy production. They can be grown on the marginal land, which are not suitable for food crops. So they must be able to handle a lot of different stress environments, such as have water stress. That can be too much water, flooding, and less water can cause drought issues, and other situations like too much salt in the soil, and it should be tolerated to be able to tolerate salt situations also, and temperature stress like hot, too hot and too cold for other crops. So these are the traits that we're looking for in a bioenergy feedstock. So perennial grasses are currently getting a lot of attention because they have a lot of these characteristics to be grown, be able to grow in a stressful environment. So one of those, today I'm going to talk about this prairie corngrass, Spartina pectinata, and my purpose of the study is there are already established a few of the already established dedicated energy crops. So I'm comparing, this is prairie corngrass, this is fairly new, but it has a lot of potential to be established as a dedicated energy crop. It is a tall, rhizomatous, and perennial warm season crop. Actually, it is the most northerly distributed warm season crop. So it is native to North America and is, as I said, is most northerly distributed. It is found in wet marshes, wet meadows, and potholes. And it is also well adapted to both wet and dry prairie lands. So it has dense rhizome, so it has a dense pyrostance of extensive rhizome system, and also it has proved to be higher tolerance to soil salinity and also early season waterlogged soils. And it has also high tolerance to cold stress, and also it has potential for higher yield potential because of its longer growing season. So they have a lot of potential to become as a dedicated crop. So on the picture right here is my colleague here. He's about 6'2" tall, and if you look at the core grass, it's much taller than him. In a good favorable environment, it can grow up to 10 to 11 feet tall. So the overall project goal is to develop a prairie core grass as a third generation bioenergy crop which can tolerate stressful environments. So I have specific objectives of my research here. It was to compare the biomass yield and potential with the early established dedicated energy crops like switchgrass, big blue stem, and miscanthus in a wet marginal land. And also determine the growth and development and compared to that of the other dedicated energy crops. And also talk about the feedstock composition comparison. It was done in Urbana, Illinois. The site was Flanagan Silt Loam, which has a land capability class of 4W, which means it's a wet marginal land with a seasonal water logging and with no drainage. And it was established in May of 2010. The plot design was randomized, complete plot design with 4 replications. And the treatments were we collected 4 natural populations of prairie core grass and compared them to miscanthus dicantias and Illinois big blue stem and Camelot switchgrass. So the data collected were light interception, biomass yield, and feedstock composition. And the study period was 2011 to 2013. This is what the field looks like. So as we said, we have 4 existences of prairie core grass. We selected those prairie core grass because 2 of those are from Illinois. And one is from South Dakota. He has a good performance in South Dakota. And one is Kansas, has it performing very well in Kansas. So we have good performance of Illinois here. So we want to compare those 4 with the switchgrass, miscanthus, and big blue stem. So talking about we wanted to compare the growth and development of among these species. And as you see, all these blue lines are all these 4 prairie core grass successions down here. And all these other colors are miscanthus, big blue stem, and switchgrass. So as you can see, prairie core grass comes out pretty early in the season. So it's like early in April, and the other miscanthus, big blue stem, switchgrass, all of them come a little later in April or early May. So this way, prairie core grass has a little advantage to that. So they can utilize that period where there's a lot of the moisture available in the soil, and then they can accumulate the biomass faster than the other crops. So it has advantage. Looking at the biomass yield, comparing to 4 of the prairie core grass existence to these 3, the yield difference, as you can see, there's like not much difference from 2011, and blue is 2011, green 2012, and gray 2013. So as you can see, there's not much difference between 2011 and 2012, but there's a big jump from 2012 to 13. And all of the crops except switchgrass and big blue stem, even miscanthus has jumped to a little bit higher. This is because of we had this precipitation. This is the precipitation data of Urbana, and you just can see this normal precipitation here. 30-year normal is on the back in the back line, and then in 2012 we had a pretty good drought during the early season. So that was the period that the crops need more moisture to accumulate biomass, and we didn't have that in 2012. That's why these crops were affected by the low water availability. But 2013 was normal, and so we got the biomass yield jumped up a little higher, so there was significant difference between the years. And but there was among the prairie goldgrass species, there was there was some very variations we found. This two of the prairie goldgrass, 17109 and 2107, was not significantly different when average over the 3 years average with switchgrass and big blue stem. Feedstock composition, we got this cellulose and hemicellulose content by analyzing the fiber, neutral digestion fiber and acid digestion fiber, and also acid digestion lignin, and we calculate the hemicellulose and cellulose content of the feedstock. And as you can see, there is a significant difference among the species, but there are not significant differences with the miscanthus and big blue stem and cellulose content. And then, as though there's a little significant difference on between the years. And as you can see, the hemicellulose, there's no significant difference in the in the species, but year was significant. It depends on how the composition changes with the time of the year and the growing season, type of the growing season they had, so that is understandable. And lignin content was also not very significant. There were some difference, but not very significant from the miscanthus and switchgrass and big blue stem with all four of the prairie goldgrass species. So, and ash was not very significant among species, but was one year, 46102 had the highest ash content, and that was the only significant difference between the species. And but that was only significant from the miscanthus. So basically, there was that's all pulling it from the 2011 data that caused the showed the difference between the other species. So in summary, we found that prairie goldgrass has biomass potential which is comparable to the dedicated energy crop as miscanthus and switchgrass. And there was variations found in the biomass yield within the prairie goldgrass excesses, and that was expected because we have prairie goldgrass excesses from different locations as well. And as you can see, the drought can affect the biomass yield performance of prairie goldgrass and miscanthus. As you saw, the biomass yield data shows there's no difference in switchgrass between the years, but there was different in the miscanthus and for all the miscanthus and all the prairie goldgrass accessions. And prairie goldgrass, since there was so one thing I wanted to tell you that during our study period, the land type was categorized as land capability class at 4C, which means wet marginal land. And during our study period, there was no standing water, or it was not like what is supposed to be like for a 4W class. So in that condition, that was definitely not very favorable for prairie goldgrass. That was not expected for that kind of a soil, but it was even that it still showed the potential to grow on and that unpredictable environment for that type of soil. So at last, prairie goldgrass feedstock composition quality was comparable to the early established dedicated energy crop. So finally, the purpose of this study is to compare the prairie goldgrass, the biomass quality and composition of prairie goldgrass, and its potential to be established as a dedicated energy crop. So I think we met our objective, and I can say that prairie goldgrass can be used as a dedicated energy crop. Thank you, and I'll take any questions.